I am turning the mic today on PGA Tour golfer, on course analyst, and new podcast host, Smiley Kaufman. Welcome, Smiley.
Thank you, Ben. I appreciate you having me on.
I think the hardest part of like podcasting is, I use air quotes, is like, how do you open? Like, how do you introduce? So, like, what's your go-to and how did you come up with it for your the Smiley Show podcast?
That's a great question. It takes a while just to get one started. That was one of the
Yeah.
things I realized. I thought it would just be easy just to get started. Well, it took probably close to, 6 to 8 months to really get the right people around me. And how to open, though, I don't know. That's a good question. I think it depends on the guests, on kind of knowing their personality. And but yeah, it can be different for everybody. You can come in hot, or you can just come in pretty bland at times. It just kind of
Yeah.
got to feel it out.
Yeah, I feel like there's a misconception of podcasts that you just like grab a mic and like start talking to people. And I know you're at least publicly three episodes released, Jake Owen, Justin Thomas, and Michael Block. So where did this idea for your the Smiley Show podcast come from? And like tell me a little about it.
Man, I think just being in the media world now that I'm an on-course analyst, typically only have, sometimes I can talk for 15 to 20 seconds, but most of the time my amount of speaking on the golf course is in short intervals. So compared to an analyst, you don't necessarily get to get all of your thoughts, whether it's on the players or the game of golf, in the broadcasts. It's pretty small windows for an on-course analyst. Most of the time we're giving you an update on what I'm observing, what I'm seeing in the lies, and just so much about the golf event that you don't really get that long form ability to speak about your opinions on the game of golf. So for me, that's been the avenue is starting a podcast. I've been able to have more in-depth conversations with not only golfers, but people from musicians. We're going to get into entertainers and other athletes and other sports. It's for me, I had such an emotional journey as a professional athlete. I saw the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. So I want to be able to capture that in the people that I talk to about their journey, because everybody finds their way to their top in different ways. So for me, that's a challenge to try to get that out of someone, and speaking with them. And I think with my name, I'm a pretty upbeat guy. I like to laugh and storytell. So that's another part of it. I love to hear fun stories, and I think that's been a very fun way to kind of get this podcast going.
And like, what was your driving range of podcast practicing? Like, do you just like do it in front of the mirror? Like, how did you kind of get comfortable, or do you just like jump right in?
Oh, I've always been pretty comfortable talking to people. No practice. I think, especially in the TV world, when I got going in the broadcast space, the advice I got the first time I started was it's a sink or swim thing. You can either do it or you can't. The TV people can tell whether you can or can't do it. So I was like, well, that kind of takes the pressure off. I'm just gonna be myself, and if they
Right.
like it, they like it. If they don't, they don't. And luckily, they did. And it's been a very fun start to my early broadcast career. And the podcast space is, kind of it's blown up over the years, and just felt like I needed it to be in that space to kind of continue my conversations off the golf course.
That's awesome. Well, I'm sure a lot of our community members here at Playing Field would make some great guests. So I'll make sure to include links for people to download, check out the show, and definitely
Thank you.
like it.
Thank you.
Hit us up, but you have a we just got back a couple a month or two ago from Tom's like adventure with all Tom's teammates down in Baker's Bay, and it was just a fun weekend there, and it seemed like you guys have a pretty tight group of guys that you're friends with, other golfers, Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, and Justin Thomas. And I saw this like video going around 2016 spring break trip, Baker's Bay. And so how did you guys all originally connect and become this little like fraternity there?
That's a great question. I've known Justin since I was probably 10 or 11 years old playing junior golf against him. And not too long after that, I met Jordan at probably the age of 13 or 14. So those two guys I've known for a very long time. And Ricky was a little older than me, not too much, but he was a world beater. I knew who he was. I looked up to him at an early age because of how good he was. And he was obviously very successful when he got on a tour, and one of the probably the best, one of the most best branded players that we've had on the tour in a long time. And everybody knows who Ricky is, and he's a fantastic guy. And when it came to that specific trip, I was luckily asked by the three of them to be the fourth. So other than that, besides the fact that we haven't all four been in a group together, it was once we got there, we realized that all four of us got along pretty good.
That's awesome. Well, I'm guessing spring break trips hit a little different now with wives and kids in the mix.
Oh yeah. It's instead of SB2K16, it's SB2K get to bed at 9:30.
Exactly. How are you finding balance now as a new father? I see your daughter's what, 5 months old?
Yeah, that's about right. Man, it's been fun. It's a challenge every day, and I've got a great wife who's been a superstar through this whole process. You know, I think the foundation between that and having family support us, you know, it's not easy. I realized that pretty soon in this deal is that kids are a lot of work, and but they are, it's very rewarding. I think the first time she started smiling at me, I was like, okay, this is what everybody cracks it up to be. This is pretty dang cool.
Yeah, it is. I had two wild beasts, and it's a lot of fun. But I know talking to a bunch of different athletes that like competition is what drives them, right? And I'd mentioned earlier before we started recording that I'm not a golf guy. I don't know much about golf. But where was your motivation? Was it internal, or do you feel motivated and competitive to like beat others, or are you just really just playing against yourself when you're out there?
That's a great question. I would say that I loved competing ever since I was a kid. That was something that I hated losing. And for me, I think that's worked against me a little bit when I really started to struggle, is that I expect so much out of myself. And sometimes that can work against a competitive athlete, especially somebody in golf who it's such a repetitive sport. And the fact that you play the game so many different ways, that I was chasing perfection in a time where my body was hurting, my mechanics weren't matching up, and then it eventually bled into the mental game where I just couldn't trust the style in which I used to play. And then I started having doubts and all of that, and it was tough. But you know, I still love the grind more than anything in the world. Like, there's nothing better than going out at 8 a.m. and practicing all day. Like, I love putting the work in and getting results, but it got to a point where I was putting all the work in and then really not seeing any results. And that was really taxing on my body and my mind.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about the mental game, and again, caveat, not a golfer. So there just seems like there's so much precision and focus needed for every swing and everything. And it's like, how much would you say yourself, but in all other golfers that you're around, like how much time do they spend on the mental side of the game?
Oh, it's so important. You know, we're out there for 4.5 to 5 hours at times. You know, you'd like to be focused for all of the golf shots that you hit, and you would like to be able to remove yourself mentally as much as you can throughout the day with still being in that frame of mind of still competing, but your mind needs a break. And sometimes, for instance, the guys that are not playing as well, their mind is working extra hard. They're thinking about a lot of things. They're thinking about results. Guys that are playing well typically have the least amount of thoughts and are thinking the least. And it's so easy. It's easier said than done. And I think that goes for a lot of different sports. The mental side can be very taxing, and it's something that guys work on all the time to figure out how to spend the least amount of mental energy on the golf course or off the golf course that they possibly can, and to be able to get away from the game.
Yeah. Give your brain a time to kind of recalibrate and it's like the baseball grind. But so take me back to the beginning. Do you remember the first time you held the golf club and kind of what that was like, and you know, talk to me about that.
Yeah, even golf, any other sport, I played everything growing up as a kid, and I obviously loved golf. My parents played golf in college, so I was that was something I really enjoyed doing. I loved basketball, played that all the way through high school, so I was playing different sports. And you know, I really think that helped me in golf because basketball, I learned how to compete, and it's a different level of competition. It's you have to get way more gritty and physical in the game of basketball than you do with golf. But I think there are lessons that I took from basketball that I was able to kind of transfer to golf that I think allowed me to be more athletic, allowed me to be tougher. And I think those were good payoffs. And I think getting started with both at an early age was super beneficial.
Yeah, and I saw that your grandfather was the head coach of the men's golf team at the University of Alabama. That's cool. Was he a big influence on
UAB.
you?
So
Okay.
University of Alabama, Birmingham. So it's UAB.
Got
But yeah,
yeah.
it's funny. He is more of a businessman that like this was his job after he retired. So he
Yeah.
just liked playing golf and somehow got the job and actually recruited Graham McDowell, who was a went on to win a US Open and many other PGA Tour events, had a great career, and how he ended up getting him as a recruit was insane to me. You know, I would say his impact was that he definitely helped financially in the beginning because golf's a very expensive game. He gave me some avenues as far as just having some product early on to where, you know, I had access to balls, just things that, you know, that other players are, you know, it's golf's an expensive game.
Yeah, for sure. And so I'm asking the question, I'm sure everybody does, but your name, you go by Smiley, your given name's Carter. Tell us about that decision.
Yeah, no. So from the South, from Birmingham, and my mother's from the North, and I was the first born, and she wanted a double name, and Smiley was a family name, and Carter was a name, and she tried to make it Carter Smiley. Then my brother came along, and he was Connor Lucky, which is another, you know, I think we were meant to be called Carter and Connor, but she got confused saying Carter and Connor all the time, and she would get us confused, and then she ended up going with Smiley and Lucky. And so two very unusual names, but both family names. And my namesake actually was my grandmother's cousin, and he was an All-American defensive end at Georgia Tech back in the 70s, and was only like 180, 190 pounds. So a defensive end at All-American at that. First off, I don't know what the level of competition was, because that doesn't make sense how that's possible, but he was. And I think it shows to his character. And in his mid-20s, he severed his spine in a accident, wrestling around with some buddies, and was in a wheelchair the rest of his life. And my parents and my granddad would always go visit him in Meridian when we would go drive to Baton Rouge, and I got to meet him probably 5 or 6 times, and up till I was about 8 or 9 years old before he passed away. So just knowing getting to see the type of person he was. You know, never had an issue in the world with anybody. It was just somebody to look up to, and to know that I got a chance to meet him, to see what type of life he lived from his mid-20s in a wheelchair. I think it just gives me all the perspective in the world and makes me proud of being named after somebody with a very unique name.
That's awesome. Well, I have to read this tweet that I saw from. I was just like looking up your name and going deep dive by this tweet I saw from 2016, and it just says Smiley Kaufman sounds like a Jewish family dog. Hashtag the Masters. I thought that was just the best. Like the, because I was like, is he Jewish? Is he not Jewish? And like the that tweet summed it up. So there you go. But take me to 2016. You're 24 years old. I heard you're living at your parents, and on that April Sunday, you're leading the Masters, going into the day. So what do you remember from that morning, like before golf even started? But like, what do you remember from like waking up that day and kind of what was going through your head?
Well, I slept good, and Sunday tee off was around 3 o'clock, so it took a long time to get to 3 o'clock. Watch movies. I don't know. I think if I would have done anything different, I probably would have probably just turned my phone off. And that was one thing I regret, was having my phone. Not that social media at that time was is what it is like it is now, but it still was a distraction that I probably could have done away with. But when I got to the golf course, I was just so ready to go, and I was so pumped up. And honestly, I wouldn't do anything different. I had a great day. I was focused. I was aggressive, and made one or two bad decisions, along with just wasn't getting. When you play with somebody like Jordan Spieth, you have to give yourself an extra bit of time after he makes big putts, because the crowd is always moving and it's loud. And I didn't do a good enough job of taking that extra second to take some deep breaths and really visualize what we were trying to do. Not that I didn't get out of my routine. I just think I got a little quicker than I would have liked to. And that was a lesson I was going to take with me to future majors if I was ever in contention again, which I never really was. But it was a great learning experience and something that I could definitely look at as something to be proud of, even though the result wasn't what I was looking for.
Yeah, that's awesome. You've been working for NBC Sports Golf as a broadcaster and on course analyst. And what would be the best advice you give to Tom getting into, you know, on Fox Sports, getting there coming up next season or season after this?
You know, it's a lot of work. It really is. If you want to be, it's just like sports, you know. I treat it like I did golf, in the fact that I spend a lot of time. I try to talk to a lot of different people to get a lot of perspectives and, you know, really ask a lot of questions of people that have been doing it a long time. That's been super helpful for me to talk to people at NBC who've called a lot of high level golf. And that's been really nice. But really what it comes down to is just be yourself and trust your instincts. And that's taken me this far. And I think with Tom, that'll be something that he'll rely on. It's just, man, he knows the game better than anyone. Just trust that, you know, your instincts, but then also there's that TV aspect side of it that you have to learn, and when not to talk too much and when to say maybe nothing at all. And that's something in TV that you learn as you go. You start to figure out, okay, this is a time actually to lay out. And there's times where I didn't lay out and I wish I did, but that's the learning curve of being on television. It's just a different beast.
Yeah, for sure. Well, is it, and when you're like broadcasting and someone like, let's say, Spieth or Ricky or even Justin Thomas is out there playing, can you be unbiased, or like, do you kind of like, you're like, I know what they're thinking now. That must be hard.
Well, I know what their expectations are of a good and a bad shot. And I will always question somebody's strategy if I feel like it was not the right move or the right play. And I feel like that's part of my job to be out in front of that. And if they make poor decisions, I'm not going to ever say that they weren't trying their best or he needs to work harder. Those are things that I feel like as an athlete, I hated when either one of two things happened: when the person commentating on me didn't know the type of player that I am, meaning like if I was a fader, a drawer, if I was an aggressive player, if I was a conservative player, those types of things I always hated being criticized on. And then two, just like what I just said earlier, which is kind of questioning whether somebody's still in it or motivated, because we always care. And regardless of what we look like on the outside, we always care. So those are the two things I've tried to stay away from, but I don't mind telling them they hit a bad shot.
There you go. Do you have, I know over the time you've had different partnerships and now you have one, looks like with Polo Ralph Lauren. And so have you thought about different partnerships like this over the years?
Man, it's changed so much over the years for me. I've worked with Polo ever since I turned professional. I've worked with Srixon, same with them. So I've had two longstanding partnerships. I had a really fun deal. Probably the one I was most known for was a deal I did with Natural Light, the beer company, Anheuser-Busch. Right. So it was when I was 24 years old. So I was kind of right in that demographic they were looking for. And, you know, social media was at that time, they gave me the ability to have fun with it. And we did. We had a blast. And at the time, I was super concerned about lining up with a beer company, because at the time I'm with, you know, Polo, Srixon, two very, you know, it's not Natty Light. You know what I mean? Those are two different things. So, you know, it's interesting. because those two things don't line up as brands or three things that we're talking about. So, you know, I've always felt like I've understood kind of social media and the golf market and what people like, what people don't like. And I feel like if I'm allowed to be myself, that I can, you know, with natural light, that I was going to be able to tell their story and my story in a way that wasn't going to be detrimental to my brand.
Yeah, it seems like there was a level, enough authenticity there for you right. to kind of then lean into it. So a final question, just beyond like downloading and supporting your podcast, how can the community here at Plainfield support you?
Well, that's a great question. You know, just getting started with the podcast, if you're interested in listening to golfers, athletes, musicians, entertainers, and their stories, it's a great place to kind of relate to maybe experiences that you've had in your own career. And obviously, I'm easy to find, Smiley Kaufman on Instagram and the pod, and easy to reach out to if anyone's ever looking to tell their story, because I love to hear different experiences that athletes or whoever have in their sport, because I think it's so relatable. Even if that person doesn't play that sport, if they're even in the business world, if they're wherever, you're able to take motivation and be inspired by other people, regardless of what field you're in. And to me, that's been my biggest draw to this, is to try to tell those stories.
Awesome, man. We'll definitely include links and all that good stuff. But Smiley, thanks for the time today, and looking forward to the next episode of the Smiley Show, baby.
Yes, sir. Thank you, man. And hope to see you down in Baker's Bay soon.